Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for The Performance Difference. The Performance Difference, featuring leading executives and HR professionals, focusing on recruiting, retaining, and improving employees. Now here's your host, Lori Genevieve.
Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Performance Difference Radio. And it's already been very lively here in the radio showroom with our conversation. I am happy to have Mr. Eric Allen. He's the president and CEO of Level 4 Performance. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
I am doing well.
Good. Life been treating you pretty good lately?
Especially this last weekend. Oh. Weather was good.
That's right. It was. It was a gorgeous weekend. Well, today the topic is about, the workplace and defining the workplace, how to come up with it. And Eric and I have actually known each other on and off throughout the years, but saw each other again a few months ago at the, what was the name of that? I can't remember the name now.
It was the
Georgia Learns.
Georgia Learns
conference. And we got talking. I said, I have got to have you on my radio show because you're actually writing a book. Mm-hmm. And now tell us, it's interesting because you had one direction for it, but in your interviews, now it's turned into something else. So let's start off with, why did you decide to write a book?
Well, it came from, really why I started my consulting practice and sort of the frustrations I've had over the years being a learning leader, really trying to find data and research and things that would help me as a business leader make decisions. And I thought, well, if I've done all this research and asked a lot of people questions, then why not write it down?
Yeah.
And actually, a friend is the one that recommended putting it into a book, and we started off as an ebook, going in a certain direction, and the research was too good. So we kind of pulled back, and now we're trying to finalize the complete book. Still not going to – it's not a novel. It's a very simple we're trying to keep it less than 150 pages, but really – give a lot of information about some of the climate of workforce development, performance, and retention strategies that, kind of fit this time in this environment where we are.
Right. So let's talk about what some of the people you're interviewing, are they Fortune 500, all over the place? Tell us a little bit about those.
No, mostly medium to small companies. Mm-hmm. A lot of the larger companies have a lot of talent. Around their leadership team, and they have these things figured out. Plus, they can absorb failure a lot better than smaller middle-sized companies. So most of my focus was on those small to mid-sized companies who can't absorb the failure the same way and have to really get this thing right, mm-hmm. but also have a ton of transition, year to year, month to month. Strategies change. I mean, a lot of these companies that are in that middle tier are totally refocused, especially after the last 4 or 5 years,
right?
And have totally come up with new things. So what we found doing some of the interviews and kind of came up with the term true capacity based on some of these companies, only looking at their equipment, their, automation, efficiency, all the things that business operational leaders think about, but very rarely did they mention their people as a critical piece. So we started to try to find where's the tie between the focus and the funding,
right?
And starting to realize that a lot of times, although the business leaders knew that they needed to invest in their people, they often didn't, mm-hmm. Because it just wasn't front of mind. So our mission is to get people to think about their capacity as an organization, their core competencies, and what they're trying to accomplish holistically with their hiring, onboarding, training,
right,
development, and retention strategies.
And why do you think that is? I mean, we were talking about before the show, to us it's a no-brainer, that the people's really a focus. Why do you think some of these businesses, it's the last, they knew it, but they didn't put a focus on it?
That's a good question. I don't know if it's even intentional. I think sometimes people kind of just fade to the background. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it's not intentional, but things get done. And you're not really focused on the people part as much, especially if in your, in manufacturing or something where you produce a good. A lot of times you don't think so much about the people. In the service industry, a little bit different. People typically think about it. But even in that case, they don't necessarily think about their people in terms of, that capacity, that building,
right,
of setting what's going to be happening in the future and how do I have talent and a pipeline that's not only going to execute my vision today, but it's going to help me meet that 3-year, 5-year milestone.
Right. And that sort of leads, of course, tons of questions for you. What else did you find in your discussions, in your interviews?
I found that once we had the dialogue, people were really enthused and excited. We got a lot of good sound bites from people that, you know, once the light bulbs went off,
right.
You know, I was telling you before the show, it was one person I was meeting with, and we talked about, you know, some of their strategies and why they were not as successful, you know, meeting these 2-3 year milestones of transition in the service industry. And, you know, we start talking about football.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he made the comment of, you know, I get it. It's kind of like, a quarterback. You can't throw the ball to where the wide receiver is. You've got to throw it to where they're going to be.
Right.
And if you've got a workforce that's geared to do today's work, but you're not thinking about your true capacity of what do you need to execute this 2-3 year strategy,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to have a completed pass. And that's really the moments that we came up with. There were quite a few of those where people just really had to, you know, I don't want to go Oprah, but the aha moment.
Yeah. No, that's a good thing.
It's an official word now.
It is,
a dictionary.
Yeah.
you have the aha moment, and it's given me some aha moments, which is why we kind of scaled back from doing the ebook and said, let's really put something else out there that's a little different than what we thought.
Right.
Because people were having a different reaction to the interview questions that we had.
Right. Do you find in your research that a lot of companies, especially small to mid, because they are trying to grow, they're not thinking about the future. They're thinking about just now it from every aspect, people, technology, and everything?
Yes and no. I think from a technology standpoint, they do think more forward.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and this is, you know, unfounded as far as hard data, but just from the conversations, you know, there are some core functions within an organization that has a little bit more, I don't want to say the word respect, but that's probably what it is when it comes to setting a forward vision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, usually your IT, you know, if you have some type of operational department, you know, those types of things really have to forecast far ahead, far in advance. Whereas a lot of HR in small to middle businesses are more transactional in the moment, in the day,
mm-hmm.
and do less of the strategic planning as part of the, you know, core plan, if you will.
Right.
It was also quite interesting. A lot of these, you know, companies, and I'd say it was about a 50-50 mix. So I won't say a lot, but quite evenly, there were HR functions that weren't really part of the core leadership team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it be HRM, HRD, you know, the management or development, the training side, most of them didn't really have a seat or a voice at the table. They were more there to execute what had been cooked up in the boardroom. So they'd go into their meetings, they'd come out and say, here's what we're going to do, go make it happen. And if it's not that integration, that tight integration, then those are usually the companies that don't invest well in their people strategy, don't have a clear one.
Right.
So that's some of the things that we found.
What do you think, you know, this whole, you know, HR not having a seat at the table, I've heard, for years, I think, you know, my 20 years, I've always heard it. What do you think makes that happen? Like, what kind of company or HR, how do they get that seat at the table?
You're going to make me make some people mad now, but I would say being more strategic. Mm-hmm. And you know, and like I said, it's not that, you know, my colleagues and even myself, it's not that we don't want to be.
Right.
But sometimes you can only do as much as you're allowed. And you know, if you're held into that transactional area and not looked at to be that strategic piece,
mm-hmm.
Then that's where you end up.
Right.
And a lot of times you end up managing, you know, to the day or to the crisis even.
Yes.
Because it's an afterthought. Now that we have an issue or we do see that we have a gap.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you, you know, as a consultant, a lot of the companies that I would be brought into were problems with, you know, companies that already had a problem.
Right.
It was never the proactive, you know, let's bring someone in to really think about what we're doing is, oh, you know, we have this strategy. We forgot about this component, this piece of it.
Right.
Now we need to bring people in, either contingent workforce, consultants, someone else to come in and mm-hmm. help us execute and make this come to life.
Right.
And I think that, you know, if business leaders would invite the human aspect to the table
mm-hmm.
earlier and more frequently, then it would yield better business results.
All right. And talking about the small businesses, I think that's key to anyone who's listening who has a business and they're trying to grow it, is think, you know, are you thinking about the people? And, you know, if you don't have that already in place, you need to get someone out to be successful.
Yeah, and the funny thing is a lot of people think that it's expensive. There's a huge cost to, you know, building your capacity.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really not. I mean, it's really just defining what your strategy is. You know, do you want to have a build strategy or a buy strategy? You know, do you want to build your capacity with your workforce and bring people in at a lower level and train them up?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you want to have a buy strategy where you say, you know what, I'm just going to put money on the table, go out and recruit the people who are a perfect match and can execute today what we have to do.
Right.
And a lot of times the delta between the build and the buy is minimal. And it's just getting through that exercise of looking at, this is where my firm wants to go in the next year, next 3 years. What are the core competencies that I'm going to need from a leadership perspective to get us there?
Right.
And now how do I go out and acquire those skills? And typically in a small company, mm-hmm. You don't have the training infrastructure
right
to get someone there. So it typically is a buy strategy. But a lot of people try to take the shortcut of a build strategy without the infrastructure to build.
Right.
So it's, you know, sending a contractor, you know, to build you a house with a thimble and a Band-Aid, not, you know, the right tools, because you don't have the equipment to build what needs to be built.
Right.
So that's probably one of the biggest, you know, struggles of small business.
Right. Well, and I think also, too, I think small business would benefit from, you know, you and I to think about, do they really understand the skills that are needed, you know, to take them to where they want to go? It's like, well, I know I want to have something like this, and they got to have project management, and they got to have this, but, you know, some of the soft skills, too, if they're going to manage people, they got to be able to do certain things, right?
And that's really the trick, and especially in the service industry, because you know, what happens when you don't have the right capacity to take on, you know, to really grow the company. You know, most small businesses, and I'll speak from experience, you know, even when I started Level 4 Performance, we only went after business that we could execute that was very linear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was our core competency. It was what we could build. As we tried to grow the practice, we ran into, you know, about 2-3 years ago, a problem of, well, why can't we take on these new things? Was because we didn't have that expertise.
Mm-hmm.
And as a small business owner, you're really stuck with, you know, do I go out and invest and hire someone or put consultant on retainer or something for a service I could sell? And, you know, so you've got real issues,
right,
that you have to deal with when you're building this capacity. But it's, you know, what I want people to realize and understand is that with any strategy, you can overcome any obstacle. And it's just a matter of knowing where you want to go, what your strategy is going to be, and then putting it in place.
How does someone, you know, there might be people listening going, I'm not even sure how to define a strategy. You know, what kind of advice or guidance would you give someone if you had a client like that?
Dial 404. No, just joking. get help.
Mm-hmm.
Get help. I mean, it really is that simple. I mean, you can't, you know, even, you know, I've had multiple clients that are consulting firms themselves. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's okay to get help and to really seek
right
input of how to put that strategy in place and really just talk to people. I mean, you and I met at a conference and, mm-hmm. you know, you do a lot of networking, you talk to people, you find out where people's problems are.
Right.
You know, you go do interviews, you mm-hmm. know, you sit down with people and talk to them about what they're going through, what their challenges are. And that would, you know, that would be my first piece of advice to someone, if, you know, if I don't give advice, but
right.
To go out and really look at what firms like yours are doing and really do the research to find out what their strategies look like.
Do you find a lot of times companies buy other companies without thinking through everything? Or at least I know my experience in working with clients, the people under the employees of the company think that way.
That is a whole nother show. seriously, a lot of the work that, you know, I really like is post-merger workforce integration.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is, you know, when two companies come together, what the suits in the room are looking at is who's the financial acquirer.
Right.
Okay. But there's multiple acquisitions going on in one place. You know, you look at the two firms, who's going to be the cultural acquirer? Whose culture are you going to maintain?
Mm-hmm.
What's the people acquisition? You know, are these people that you're bringing on capable of doing what you need the new company to do?
Right.
Or if you're the financial acquirer, are your people capable of doing
right.
what needs to be done? And how do you integrate all those things? So, you know, a lot of people look at the financial acquisition,
mm-hmm.
but there are tons of small acquisitions that happen when you look at, you know, post-merger workforce integration.
Right.
And really getting the most out of that new combined workforce.
Mm-hmm.
And identifying that talent through assessment, through training, through interviewing. There are a lot of different things you can do to find out what that is. But it's often, once again, it's an afterthought.
Right.
There's a lot of good cases on companies who have merged, even large ones.
Mm-hmm.
I think Harvard did a case with, I think it was Oracle and PeopleSoft. And even that, all the lessons learned in something that big, because of the lack of paying attention to the cultural acquisition.
Right.
Those are two totally different companies with totally different cultures.
Yes.
And although the product lines made a good fit, customers were the same. Internally, it caused a tremendous amount of anxiety and chaos that almost made it not successful.
Wow. And what do you remember from your research? Like, what did they do to make it successful? Or
oh God, I can't remember all the details. There's a lot of communication.
Mm-hmm.
Larry Ellison really stepped in, put in some new leadership and some key people,
right.
and really worked their way through. And that's really the trick to anything like that is the communication. Once again, it comes down to strategy. What's the communication strategy? What's the integration strategy? How are you going to evaluate and assess the talent? What are you going to do to fill the gaps and get people comfortable?
Right.
You know, I often run into leaders when I'm consulting with them, and the worst threat to a strategy is a disengaged and ill-equipped workforce.
Yes.
And if you take a step back before you put that strategy in place, whether it be through an acquisition, whether it be through a new product, whether it be through a new service offering, whatever it is, and look at the workforce that you're going to need, and say, how do I get people that are engaged and well-equipped to execute this strategy? Because most of them fail because it's something that the workforce does not consume and execute. They can't understand it or they can't buy into it and they can't execute on it.
Well, I'm glad you said communication strategy because strategy overall is important, but I think that's another piece people forget is, but how are you going to communicate it? Because you can have a great strategy, but if you don't execute it from a communication standpoint effectively, it could all go for nothing.
That's organizational development 101 is all about change management and the communication strategy. And a lot of times with organizations, they'll come up with really good ideas, but if you don't have that change management component, that communication component, identify all of your risk, having your risk mitigation strategies, that's critical.
Mm-hmm.
And so many companies get caught, and even on the HR development side, they look at everything from a training prism. And, oh, it's a training issue.
No.
Most times it's a change issue. It has nothing to do with training whatsoever. And we overtrain.
Mm-hmm.
It's the difference between, where I'm at now is the identifying the big difference between information and preparation. And a lot of times people mistake their training programs for preparatory exercises when they're really informational exercises.
Okay.
They want to give people information, all this information, do this, this is what we do. Here's how we operate. Here's how you should operate.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what everybody thinks we do to operate.
Right.
But they don't really look at the preparation. And in leadership development, that's even more critical.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking earlier, before the show about, a good, what's a solid leadership program.
Right.
And it's really giving people experiential training, not classroom training.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people think of their leadership development as, we partner with this university and we have them go through this and we do. But how are you taking, looking at your components, looking at your pieces, your people.
Right.
And saying, what are their skills? What are their passions? What engages them? What keeps them going?
Mm-hmm.
And now let's match that with opportunities in the organization.
Yes.
And say, all right, well, I know that this employee is a staff accountant, but they want to be CFO one day. But here's some of the things that they've never done.
Right.
Well, but over here, we've got this great project where we have, a deficit of employees. We don't have the right, number of employees to carry it out.
Right.
So we're going to go out and get contractors anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So why not give this person that needs this skill a stretch opportunity and put them on this project with the right supervision, the right mentoring,
right,
and give them those skills that they need. And that's a far more effective leadership development process than sending someone off to a class,
right,
and thinking they're going to come back and be able to execute. Give them practical, real things that benefit the employee, benefit the organization, and really cost less, and make a well-engaged employee, because that employee will not leave to go find that next opportunity. Because even though, and I know I'm rambling, but no. You know, I often tell people, don't confuse a job with an opportunity.
So tell us what you see the differences are.
If an employee really wants to move forward, there may not be a job that's open that you can put them in.
Right.
So what we do is say, well, we don't have anything for you. Just wait till somebody retires, dies, or whatever else, and then
and
you can
like,
get that job.
Right.
You can get that job. You know?
I'll go somewhere
and that,
else.
And that's what, yeah, and they check out, or they become extremely disengaged, okay, or they start looking. They start destroying morale. It's a lot of things that they do
right.
because of that job not being available.
Right.
But I guarantee you there are opportunities. So if you can give them opportunities, not necessarily a job, but give them opportunities, even compensate them if you have to. But that keeps a more engaged employee.
Right.
And, you know, when you look at succession planning, you really want to build that big pipeline and have people there for a little bit of continuity. Well, that keeps that staff accountant, we'll keep that example, engaged for 5-6 years possibly until
right.
that new position opens up where you can put them in a job.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, it's really easy to do, but don't confuse a job with an opportunity. Companies have tons of opportunities to give employees, but they often don't because they're so focused on job.
Well, they put people in boxes. You are this, and that's all you can do. And, you know, until we create that title or, like you said, becomes open, you'll just have to keep being happy where you are.
And you know, the companies that are they're always on that best place to work list and, you know, people rave about, they have great, you know, employee engagement surveys. Those are all companies who find those opportunities, who find ways to keep an employee engaged. And they realize it's not just about what we hired you to do.
Right.
But, you know, we hired you to blossom. We hired you for your potential. Although this is the job that you have.
Right.
This is what we expect. And this is the opportunities we can give you to continue to develop. You know, a lot of these companies where people, you know, matriculate for 20, 30 years, it's not about the benefits. It's not about the, you know, all these other things people think it's about. It's not about the pay.
Right.
It's that they've been given opportunities to do what they do best and what they enjoy, even if it's not their job. They're given opportunity. And that's why I say it's really not that expensive to put a good program in place, because we all have, you know, people doing 2-3 jobs.
Yes.
We need people to help out on other capital projects, special projects. So just, you know, tap into the passion of your workforce, find out what they like to do, and give them the opportunity to stretch their skills and give them some learning along the way.
Well, as a learning development professional myself, I've come more to where I like to design something where you give everyone a certain little level of knowledge, but then basically activities are whatever real world problems they are facing right now. It's almost like one-on-one coaching versus trying to come up with something and have them figure out, oh, that's like my situation now, and here's what I should do and all that. So
yeah, I always tell learning leaders, if you show me a learning leader focused on content, I'll show you one that's failing. And
yes.
I truly mean that. And if you make all of your learning about the classroom and not experiential,
right,
then even as a learning organization, you're sitting there constantly revising data, revising content, making your next sessions pretty pamphlets and doing all of these things when those things are not as effective with time or money or your resources, opposed to really finding, like I said, those things that your employees are passionate about and giving them those real world opportunities that benefit the employee, benefit the organization, and have a lot less cost and infrastructure requirement.
Right, because that's how I could see people saying, well, if we tailor the training to every single person, you know, then that means we got to have more people to do it.
No, you need less. I mean, literally, if you think about giving people, if an employee owns their development, that's the thing. So often, and you know, I know some of the people you've interviewed really believe in the whole employee owning their in you know their learning or kind of open source learning or user generated content or
right.
you know all these other words that people like to use. But basically, it all boils down to let the person identify their experience. There's tons of data out there that people can find, and it really goes into. I've had a lot of debate with some of my colleagues about the role of the training organization. And, you know, in the past, it's been more about the sage on the stage. It's been the trainer has to be the smartest person in the room and they stand and deliver, you know, the show up and throw up,
yes.
know, whatever you want to call it. You know, that's what they're about. But, you know, now the training organization has to learn how to shift with where we are today and become more of a facilitator of knowledge and not a speaker of knowledge. We don't
right.
give the knowledge, but we help lead people to the right place and almost become a spa type of, you know, if you look at a learning spa, you know, we're here to facilitate the learning in any general way that we can. If it's, you know, introducing you to a book or an article, or if it's making sure you're connected with the right coach or mentor.
Right.
That's the new era of a learning organization, and not the stand and deliver, you know, death by PowerPoint.
Right.
And send you on your way.
Amen. I am so with you there. You and I were talking about earlier that usually when companies are downsizing or they got to cut costs, training development's first thing to go. But then you think about the people that are left. They got to have new skills, because now they're taking, you know, one job. They're what was one role, now three roles into one. Expand what we were talking about there.
Yeah, it's interesting, because what most leaders will do is to save money, they cut workforce.
Right.
And we get it. That has to happen sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But just because you cut workforce doesn't mean you need to cut opportunity and cut, you know, the development. In most cases, it means you need to increase it.
Mm-hmm.
It's far cheaper to train an employee or to educate an employee on new skills than it is to acquire a second employee. But a lot of these people who are left after, you know, downsizing are stuck doing 2-3 jobs,
mm-hmm.
Some of which they may not even be prepared for.
Right.
But we all know that the first thing to go is training, and then bodies. And then you have a workforce who's there, they're dispirited, they're asked to do things that are outside of their scope.
Mm-hmm.
They're asked to do things outside of their ability or even outside of their passion.
Mm-hmm.
And that just creates that disengaged, you know, workforce.
Exactly. You and I also were talking about earlier about, you know, do you hire full time or do you hire a contingent work? You know, how would you suggest someone make that kind of decision? Like, how would they determine, do they need just go ahead and put the investment in a full-time employee, or could they just get them for a period of time?
Well, it goes back to that build or buy strategy. You know, once again, it's as learning leaders and HR professionals in general, we can't be afraid to exert a strategy and a clear strategy and put something forward that may be uncomfortable for some or controversial, but it's the same thing that everyone in the organization is probably already doing. And in that, you really have to look at, how long do we need these employees?
Mm-hmm.
What do we need their skills? If, you know, how long does it take to train someone up?
Right.
You know, if you're moving from a certain platform to develop a new product, and the new product is going to take you 18 months, you've got the whole project plan to do it, but they're going to need to know how to code on a different platform. And, you know, which is your strategy? Do you bring in a bunch of, you know, students that just came out of college and they know code and they know that platform that you're writing on, and you put them on it? Or do you take your workforce you have currently,
mm-hmm.
and train them up? Well, business moves faster than that.
Yes.
And that's one of those examples where a lot of people would look at it and say, well, there's a training problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. It's really a change management or a strategy problem.
Right.
Of how did you need to get where you need to go? And back to the football analogy, I mean, you've got to throw the ball where the quarter, you know, where the receiver's going, not where they are.
Right.
And so the first thing is really looking at how long you're going to need them. What skills do you need? How long does it take someone to acquire those skills?
Mm-hmm.
And really just having a solid strategy.
Right. You know, one thing actually while you're talking popped in my mind, when I was in the corporate world, I remember, you know, one company I worked for many, many years ago, it was, you know, we got to get rid of the bottom 10, you know, the bottom 10 have to go out. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, that's the old GE.
Yeah. Actually, it was around those days.
Well, you know, it was funny because at one of my previous companies, we were lucky enough to receive a former CEO from GE who came in and came in to lead us, and that was that and Six Sigma. One of the first things they brought in, and as a premise, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's also, you know, one of those things. You know, if you ask someone, what's the lowest acceptable level of performance that you're willing to tolerate?
Yeah,
they'll mostly, you know, look at, you know, that 10%, that bottom 10, and say, oh, that, you know, and always say, well, no, it's actually, those are tolerable because they're still there.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's that 10%, but I think it's in any, you know, strategy, you have to constantly evaluate the fit.
Mm-hmm.
And not be afraid. You know, I always talk about the 5 P's: properly place, people, prevent problems.
Okay, tell us a little, so go into those.
Well, If it's about fit and, mm-hmm. and getting the right person at the right time to do the right job.
Right.
So a lot of times we have improperly placed people and we have the problems. We have non-execution of strategy. Mm-hmm. We have chaos. We have diminished morale. We have you can fill in the blank.
Right.
You get it with people that are improperly placed. And I think a lot of people, especially in small business,
mm-hmm.
Are afraid to make quick moves because these people sometimes have so much information or whatever else. And you're scared to, you know, as I heard one person say a couple of weeks ago, transition them to customer. Everybody's not meant to fit on the team.
Right.
You know, some people you need to transition to something else, whether it be inside or outside of the organization. And sometimes that becomes a point of anxiety. But, you know, like the five P's.
Right. What about culture? How has that played in your talkings with people and such in the workforce?
Culture is a funny thing.
Also.
Yeah. Culture is funny. A lot of people will say culture plays into it, but don't really know their culture.
Mm.
There's the culture that the executives believe they've built. And then there's the real culture that the employees are executing in.
Yes.
And sometimes they may not be congruent. They actually may be opposing.
Yes.
One another. And that's why, you know, some of the most effective companies constantly do employee engagement surveys. They get a pulse of what their employees are thinking. And then the old, you know, let's bring everybody to the table. Talk mm-hmm. about the change with the employees. Find mm-hmm. out, you know, what's going on. There was one client I was working with that actually was doing their strategic planning for their future, you know, that's about a 2-3 year horizon. And they brought people from the different areas of the workforce
right.
to come into the table to discuss it. And I think that was a richer process mm-hmm. because it wasn't, let's just sit, you know, all of the C-suite people in a room, come up with what our strategy is and then go communicate it. You know, bringing people to the table was very effective.
Right. Now, you say do employment engagement surveys all, but constantly, define constantly.
At least annually.
Oh, okay.
At least.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you think you have a couple of subcultures, maybe more often, mm-hmm. which, you know, some, especially the larger the company and the more decentralized functions, or if you have branches or, you know, post, then it's better to do it even more frequently mm-hmm. or even ask different questions, maybe do your general engagement survey annually, but then go to those subcultures and really find out what's going on within those subcultures, because a lot of times that'll derail any strategy that you have. Once again, if you don't have those risks,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you don't identify clearly what are the things that are going to keep us from being able to execute this.
Right.
Not just in the economic world or the political landscape or financially, but from our people.
Mm-hmm.
You can have the best funding. You can have the best strategy, the best design for a new product. But if you don't have your workforce completely engaged and bought in and understand what their capacity is.
Right.
Once again, we go back to that true capacity. If you don't know what their capacity is,
mm-hmm.
then that is your biggest threat.
Right.
And very rarely in a threat analysis do you see
right.
people as a threat. And it's a big threat.
Yes, exactly. It's sort of, you know, a lot of times in software, and I've worked with very various software companies, it's like, you know, the salespeople sell it. Whether it can actually do it or not is a whole nother question.
Well, but you know, they'll put tons of focus groups, taste testers, you know, test pilots, and all these other things. But, you know, it's actually, you know, one of the things with the Boeing Dreamliner, you know, that took, you know, got awful years to, you know, get off the ground. It mm-hmm. was, and I don't know how true this is, but someone was saying one of the things that slowed it up is they did everything they wanted to have this great experience. But then when people sat in the test, you know, craft,
right.
the seats weren't comfortable. It's just little things like that. As you know, they
over-engineered
everything else.
And yes.
it's a beautiful plane. But something that simple. And you know, if maybe would have thought through that, it would have been a little different, but like I said, don't know how true that is, but it's a good sample of an analogy of, you know, really getting everybody on board.
Right.
And really thinking through the entire piece of the process.
It almost seems like, you know, one thing as you're talking throughout this whole time as this sort of gone through my head is that we get caught up in the cool technology. And we all want to be the latest and greatest, that sometimes we forget the basics that make people happy.
Yeah, I'm not a big early adopter. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, a lot of people, you know, jump on new technologies and new things, and
it always has bugs.
You know, I'm still coming around to e-learning. You know, as a training professional, you know, a lot of my colleagues get nervous, you know, when I talk about that. But, you know, I just think that it's all situational.
Right.
And, you know, going back to a strategy, mm-hmm. You know, learning leaders are notorious for this. Here's the way it plays out. The CEO goes to a conference.
Right.
All of the competitors are doing e-learning. So he comes back and calls the training manager in the room and says, "What's this e-learning thing? We got to get us some.
Next week." I have clients like that. Well, we got to do e-learning. Why?
Yeah. And so you have an e-learning strategy.
Right.
And it makes me cringe when you walk into somewhere and they go, "We have an e-learning strategy." And I was like, good for you. because, you know, training in its essence is like anything else. You have to have a comprehensive strategy.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have an e-learning strategy, let's just say you were the transportation department and you only had an airplane strategy.
Right.
Well, if you got to get people from Atlanta to Macon, airplane probably not the most efficient, you know, way to do it.
Right.
So let's just have a transportation strategy,
mm-hmm.
and let's employ every available resource. Let's have cars, trains, planes, bikes, walking,
right.
whatever you want. You know, if I've got to get from one building to the next, plane's not going to do me too good.
Yeah.
And that's really what, you know, some of this technology and e-learning, especially e-learning, has become. And I think you're getting a lot of people now rethinking.
Mm-hmm.
What that looks like, and e-learning is becoming more simple.
Yes,
it's becoming more video based,
mm-hmm.
Because I think that's a proven effective method of training.
Yes,
and so yeah, I think that, you know, not jumping on the new technology can be wise sometimes.
Right. Well, it's like, you know, I know people, they never go out and get the latest phone because there's always bugs or, you know, that type of things half the time.
Yeah, well,
it's
with
I'll
that,
just wait till it gets better.
I fall victim to Apple.
Oh, you're like my husband, huh?
Get you every time.
Now, what do you think? What is this? What role can assessments play in the people piece? You know, of course, I'm a big component of assessments because I'm the type of person that's like, what can I find out about this person that I may not know? Because assessments, a lot of times, a good assessment will show you what, you know, the person can't always see. Like, how do you feel assessments can play a good role in the people or the workforce?
You know, assessments are like anything else, like a good interview.
Mm-hmm.
You only get the answer to the question you asked. So the first piece of that is finding the right assessment.
Right.
Asking the right questions, and what are you trying to find? You know, what is it that you're really trying to ask? And then ask questions that you can fix. You know, I think a lot of surveys or assessments that people use get into things where you have no intention of fixing. You know, I fuss at trainers all the time when they do evaluations. They spend so much time evaluating. Was the chair comfortable? I'm not buying new chairs. I'm not changing the wattage of the light bulbs this week. So,
right.
You know, let's ask questions that we get answers to that are relevant. So I think the first thing with assessment is picking the right one. There are tons of them out there. They're
mm-hmm.
all great for the purposes that they're there. But, you know, really find out what your purpose is.
Right.
The second is really having a good strategy about what are you going to do with the information that you get from this assessment.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask someone about their desires and their passions and the way they think and the way they behave in an environment, and you're not willing to give them those stretch opportunities or give them the additional training that they need,
mm-hmm.
or facilitate some of the change in the workplace, then you're only going to add more, you know, to the frustration.
Right.
Of what they're doing. And then third is just, you know, I would say really have a good frequency of when you do these surveys, when you do the follow-up, measure the results of what you've learned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not just the cognitive surveys, but also do a complete battery of surveys. You know, do some things that really tap into a person's passions, their desires, their skills.
Right.
A lot of times people have blind spots in their skill sets.
Mm-hmm.
And these assessments really pull out some of their passions, some of their, you know, desires or things that they really want, what makes them whole in the workplace.
Yes.
And really helping them identify those blind spots and then giving them those stretch opportunities really creates more of a dynamic, you know, culture. You talked mm-hmm. earlier about culture, but that's really the culture of a learning organization or a company that really embraces
right.
development and learning.
Exactly. Well, that's great. Well, our time is wrapping up a little bit. Is there anything else, you know, when I know you, like you said, your book started in one direction and went into another. Any idea when your book might be out or
soon? We're just taking a couple of steps back, but I know we're a little bit delayed, but we're hoping, well, I'm hoping that within the next 4 months we'll have something.
Mm-hmm.
And most likely, because we have been delayed, we'll start off as an ebook. once again, put it online, and then look at, you know, possibility of print depending on, you know, how many people are interested in it.
Yes, exactly. Well, I will definitely be one of those. And I would love to have you back, you know, even maybe with some of your other, you know, clients or people that you've talked to and such, and the impact plays. That would be great.
Absolutely. I look forward to it.
Well, so if people want to reach out to you, either maybe they want to be interviewed or maybe they look like they could use your help, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
You can email me at eallen, E-A-L-L-E-N, at level4performance.com. Or the website, www.level4performance.com.
Great. Well, good. Well, thank you again. Again, we will have this podcast posted. It will also be on iTunes. And if you want to know more about the performance difference, you can go to www.theperformancedifference.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Today's show has been brought to you by The Performance Difference, dedicated to helping you achieve your business goals through employee growth. To learn more, please visit theperformancedifference.com.